The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday forum. Very, very busy week, what with the US Trade Court blocking Trump's tariffs, only for the tariffs to be reinstated by an appeals court, the cabinet approving legislation to ban trade with the occupied territories on some fronts, and Children's Healthcare Ireland potentially being subsumed by the HSE. So much going on, and of course, visas for students, be they Chinese students in the United States who may be turfed out fairly promptly, or Irish students who are hoping to go to the United States to pursue courses in the autumn, because this is the time they'd be processing their visas and getting applications from colleges and so on. I'm joined by Paul McAuliffe, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West, Pat Leahy, political editor of the Irish Times, Janet Horner, Green Party councillor for Dublin North Inner City, and also Cathaoirleach of the Green Party. Congratulations on that elevation to you, Janet. Okay, where do we start? The tariffs. I was surprised last night, Pat, that the tariffs, you know, the market did not spook again with the appeals court, because the markets don't like the tariffs. And yet when they're reinstated, the markets didn't fall.
No, the markets don't like the tariffs. And of course, we're constantly told the markets don't like uncertainty. But I think that they have learned at this stage that a certain amount of unpredictability and uncertainty
they're building it in.
Is unavoidable with the Trump administration. I think there's an emerging view, and I've spoken to not just people in Dublin about this, but people in Brussels. But there's an emerging view that probably a deal will be done, that Trump may threaten to push the nuclear button, yeah, but won't actually push it. If you look at...
You're saying taco.
Well, this is
Trump
what,
always chickens out.
This is what the markets say, isn't it? Or what the certainly short-term people trading on the markets would tend to say that. But I do also think that there is a view in Brussels and in Dublin that things may get worse before they get better, and that the only way that Brussels can approach this is from a position of strength, indicating its willingness to implement reciprocal tariffs if it comes to that. And that may be necessary, as the Chinese did. And, you know, one of the other things that the Chinese did, aside from putting the reciprocal tariffs on US imports, was to ban the export of precious metals from China to the US. So I think that Brussels will be thinking about those sort of kind of tactical moves as part of its overall strategy.
I was looking at Jim Shuto last night on CNN quite late, and he was talking to the European representative who was negotiating with the US trade representative, and he was a German, I think, and he but very subtle, sticking in the little threats. It was very. He reminded me of Dr. Strangelove. I hope he'll pardon me saying that. But Janet, let me see. I'll come to you in a moment. Yeah, this is the breaking news. Jerry Adams has won his defamation case against the BBC. He will be awarded damages to the tune of €100,000. I'm not sure when we'll be talking, either hearing from Jerry Adams or talking to a reporter. We'll bring that to you in a moment or two. But anyway, I'll go back. We'll get reaction from you guys to that in a moment. But to you, Janet, on the tariffs and the announcements by Trump, do you ever suspect that he actually manipulates the markets? Because we know on Liberation Day and thereafter, he told certain people he was doing certain things in advance of announcing them publicly, and those people made fortunes. So, Janet?
Yeah, I mean, I think speculating about what Trump is intending to do and what he isn't intending to do and what is the byproduct of his chaos.
Look, if you tell your pals, I'm going to do this, and they can predict which way the markets are going to go based on the nature, how horrendous the announcement might be, you know, you tell your pals, they bet accordingly in the stock markets and make fortunes.
Well, I mean, if you look at the way that Trump and his family are monetizing the presidency, I think it would be surprising if there isn't a bit
that,
of that going on.
And I think that's the lesson. And you can see statements from Mark Carney, from Europe, from China. The United States administration has now become an incredibly unreliable partner on trade, on international affairs, and so on. And I suppose we have to factor that into how we deal with them and the unpredictability of all of that. But I think Pat is right. I think it's estimated that nearly $3 billion dollars in personal wealth has been created in the first 3 months of the presidency. Like, you know, that it would be enough to take down any other politician in any other country, and yet it doesn't seem to phase it. And I know we might not get the chance to go on and talk about it, but Marco Rubio's attempts now to change the travel arrangements or the visa process for people who are traveling to the United States who have either criticised Israel or who are preventing American companies from on freedom of speech grounds. You know, they just are inconsistent and unreliable, and it is really regrettable because the United States should be a strong partner for many countries. Yeah.
Well, we'll go into the student visa thing and indeed the performance of Marco Rubio, who has become quite a chameleon from being the man they thought was a safe pair of hands becoming Secretary of State and now turns out to be just a creature of Trump. Now, back to Gerry Adams. What's your reaction, Pat, to that?
Well, it's clearly very, very good news for Gerry Adams himself. I mean, if you think what the alternative was, that he lost it, he's faced with a massive bill for legal costs and also this huge dent to his credibility. And so he has got the endorsement of the jury in this. I mean, I didn't see any. I read the reports, of course, but I didn't see any of the case. He seems to have had a pretty difficult time at the hands of various witnesses down there. Certainly witnesses including Senator Michael McDougall, who gave evidence for the BBC, were very strongly critical of Gerry Adams. And but he has won. It's good news politically, I think, for Sinn Féin. I think it would have been a blow for Sinn Féin politically if Gerry Adams had lost. The 100,000 that he's awarded in damages is not, by the standards of these things, a vast sum, but it's certainly not insignificant. So, to state the bleeding obvious, I suppose it's a really good day for Gerry Adams.
Now, the problem the jury had, I suppose, that Mr. Justice Owens said the jury on Wednesday, he said, they must decide whether the words complained of by Mr. Adams in the programme and article say he gave the okay for or sanctioned the murder of Mr. Donaldson. Had they found that that was the case, there are further criminal implications, I would have thought.
Well, yes and no. I suppose it's a, the file remains open. Murder files are never closed. The file remains open on the murder of Dennis Donaldson. Would there have been an extra Garda investigation had he lost this case? I struggle to see that it would, to be honest. And of course, the standard of proof in a civil case is different from the standard of proof in a criminal case. But what it is, I think, is at least from this jury, is an endorsement of Gerry Adams, the peacemaker, as it were, as opposed to Gerry Adams'
line, wasn't it?
History.
I'm a peacemaker.
As before, I've always made the peace that Gerry Adams will go down in history, certainly as a peacemaker, but an awful lot of people believe, irrespective of this verdict, an awful lot of people believe that before Gerry Adams made peace, he made war for a long period of time. And that's part of the story as well.
Janet?
I mean, are you allowed to say you're surprised by the result of that?
You can.
Say what you like.
If you're surprised.
But it certainly would seem that it opens up quite a wide range of other potential. Like, you know, as we were saying just before we went on air here, like the Say Nothing programme was very widely watched in Ireland, certainly very, very widely watched internationally. Like it sets a very clear narrative about what it speculates Gerry Adams' role was in relation to certain incidents in the Troubles and his role within the IRA. And, you know, you would imagine that the result of this trial is going to open up a lot more questions as to
Every trial is different. It stands on its own merits. You know, precedent doesn't come into the case when you're taking an action in the High Court. So we shall see whether it would steal his resolve to go further.
I suppose, Pat, there's obviously the option for appeal as well, and that may result in the overall narrative being different. So we should be conscious of that. I think, you know, rather than speaking to the specifics of the case, which is, I suppose, very difficult given the proximity to the decision, like there's a broader view here is that many people have baked in their view of the IRA campaign and of Gerry Adams' connection with that. You know, there's many people in from political sphere that believe that younger people have baked that in, and it's not a matter which dissuades them from voting for Sinn Féin. And equally, there are many people in my generation and older who have a firm view of the involvement of Gerry Adams in the overall conflict, and I'm not sure this case will change views one way or the other. I do believe there has been a consistent attempt by Sinn Féin to sort of whitewash the campaign of the IRA and of the actions of the IRA, and I think that's a separate point from what has been decided here. They have consistently done that over time. They've done it with different internal party exhibitions, you know, the one in O'Connell Street that was held, different commemorations, and so on. I don't think any of that has changed. What my fear will be is they will use this to continue to whitewash the campaign of the IRA.
Well, just remind everyone that Gerry Adams has won his defamation case against the BBC and has been awarded damages of €100,000. He had claimed that a BBC Spotlight programme related article published in 2016 defamed him by falsely accusing him of sanctioning the killing of the British agent Dennis Donaldson at a cottage in Donegal in 2006. Adams insists he had no involvement in the death, while the BBC has denied that it defamed Mr. Adams. Now, our reporter at the Four Courts is Emily Keegan. Emily, what can you tell us?
Hi, Pat. So yes, the jury had just come back from 6 hours and 49 minutes in total of deliberation, and they have reached the verdict that the statement made in both the Spotlight programme and a corresponding online article did confirm that Gerry Adams sanctioned the killing of Dennis Donaldson, or did imply that, rather. They also found that in both cases it was not in good faith or reasonable to publish this claim. Now, the BBC, it's a claim from an anonymous source. The BBC is defending that they had five other corroborating sources that were not included in either the programme or the article, but the jury today have decided that they did still defame Gerry Adams, and he has been awarded damages of €100,000.
Has he said anything on leaving the court?
He is just pulling up to the mic stand here now, so we'll get a statement from him very shortly.
Okay, well, you can send it to us or bring it to us as soon as you can. Thank you very much for that report from outside the High Court. We'll probably come back to that in a moment. Gerry Adams is actually speaking at the moment outside. I can see on Sky that it's actually happening at the moment. We'll get some words from him very, very shortly. But let's talk about other matters that have hit the headlines this week. Children's Health Ireland, it looks like it's a basket case.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's plenty of different issues that have kind of surfaced in the course of the last few weeks.
Isn't it the old 46A story? One scandal, then another, then another.
Yeah, and I think, and obviously once things start to emerge, you do start digging much more into the governance of what seems to have been significant oversights about unnecessary surgeries and a range of different issues there that I think, like, there has to be much more investigation at this point into what the governance has happened there, what has gone wrong with governance over the last number of years. And I think, obviously, the Children's Hospital opening, hopefully, and getting
again
operational as soon as possible, but within the next 12 months.
But very hard to get hard answers from them about how is the staff planning going? You know, how are you going to do the transfer of the doctors and nurses and all the ancillary staff from the existing children's hospitals into one? There's got to be overlap. The timing of this, where are people going to live? Are people going to have parking if they're working on shift? All those questions. You try to get answers and you get none.
And as a representative for the North Inner City, I would also say, you know, obviously the Temple Street site there is a very significant one within the area as well. So there's huge, the future of that site, the future of what happens even with the premises there is a big unknown for those of us kind of representing that area and wanting to see that area, sort of the future of it secured and those resources put into making sure we have facilities there that actually serve the community. And that's, I think, so there's multiple unknowns there for at the local level as well as with the at the governance level and the operational for what we want to see as a very successful children's hospital once it does open.
Paul?
Yeah, look, I would agree with you, Pat. The CHI were before the Public Accounts Committee, which I'm a member of, last week, and we made a decision yesterday that they will be called back again. And we were not satisfied with some of the answers to those questions. And I think one of the things that emerges for me is, I suppose many of us thought the days of the clinician being God and unquestioned, we thought those days were gone. And it's certainly clear that there, both in terms of culture, but also in terms of governance, there was a number of occasions where clinical decisions were made, which resulted in two things. One is the delay in services to patients, where they could have accessed those services more quickly by the public system. And secondly, a misuse of the NTPF, or proposed misuse of the NTPF. Yeah. And the idea that people would receive less of a service and that it would cost the state more, and that could be made by a small number of people and then hidden from the HSC, I have to say, is a deeply, deeply worrying.
This issue is not that clear, Pat, is it? You know, that they talk about, and the head of the HSC said, I'd call the guards if, you know, a chapter and verse on this. But the idea that a consultant, whoever that person might be, might say, well, this is going nowhere in the public system. If I get him in on Saturday or her in on Saturday, I can fix this child more quickly. We don't know, and we'll have to possibly hear all the detail.
I think this is a good way to go in this, yeah. in that aspect of the controversy, but also of other aspects to the controversy as well. The way that CHI staff were managed or not managed, the relations between them, the extent to which CHI is able or has shown itself able or unable to actually manage its own staff and create a productive culture within its hospitals. And bear in mind, these are the guys that are supposed to be running the most expensive piece of infrastructure in the state's history. And I suspect, I know there is discussions ongoing in government about this. I think at the very least, you will see much greater oversight of CHI by the HSE in the future.
Very difficult space, Pat, though. Like, if any one consultant, you're right, Pat, we do need to be careful in terms of where it goes, but if any one consultant is willing to implant a device which is not approved, or they're willing to carry out a surgery which may or may not be required, you know, they are clinical decisions, and there does have to be accountability at a clinical level, and there has to be good clinical governance and oversight of those decisions. And I have to say, as much as there is management issues there within the and governance issues within CHI, the issues that worry me most is the clinical decisions that were made and the ability to question and manage.
Quick question, would the HSE be any better at running CHI than CHI?
Or maybe the question is, would it be any worse?
Okay, Janet, I mean, the idea of bringing it into the major bureaucracy instead of letting them plough their own furrow.
I mean, in every case, it's a matter of oversight and governance, you know, and making sure that that is there. And obviously there has been poor management in the past and poor oversight. That has been historic in both HSE and within CHI now. So, you know, regardless, I think for the population, the most important thing is that when they are using state facilities, they know they are receiving quality healthcare. And that means, I don't think they're interested in who's governing it. They just want to know appropriate governance is in place.
But one of the ways of enforcing appropriate governance is to have accountability. Yeah. And you haven't seen that in this instance yet, that the people who were responsible for, if it was wrongdoing, that they are named, shamed.
Yeah. You always feel when you're dealing with, it's like fighting through a fog, trying to get at the reality hidden in the fog. Let's change tack for a moment and talk about student visas. And, you know, it will affect Irish students applying for visas. Maybe not J1s this year, they're already in process, but J1s next year. And indeed, all those young Irish who go over, as I did myself, to do a master's in Georgia Tech, but kids going over on athletic scholarships and so on. Now, Marco Rubio said there'll be a more detailed scrutiny of social media. Show me your diary, please, Pat. Mm. You know, that's how it's an affront.
It's frankly monstrous. Yeah. And this is, you know, what the Trump administration is doing to the United States. And I suppose we can only hope that we only have to put up with 4 years of this. The question is, how much damage does the United States do to itself and the rest of the world in that?
We start responding like, you know, I think Ireland, more than almost any other country in the world, has really benefited from the capacity to travel overseas, whether temporarily or long term, for student experiences, for work experience, for whatever else. It has been hugely enriching for almost every young person who's taken the experience to go overseas. I'd say in Ireland, it's been a very enriching experience. And, you know, Britain has obviously gone down a route of looking to rescind and retract the abilities for young people to travel and take those experiences. The US is doing so similarly. Yeah.
They have visa-free access here. We have to get a visa to go there, or an ESTA or whatever, you know, if you're going. So the question is, do we respond? Because we don't want to deter the very valuable American tourists, do we?
I think Pat's right. I think we have to see if this is something that will last longer than 4 years. It's hard not to use the word authoritarian to the policies that are being applied. Like, and there's a total inconsistency. So they want to take action and prevent people travelling who are preventing the right of Americans to have freedom of speech. But at the same token, they are limiting the freedom of speech of students who want to travel. That's an entirely inconsistent position. It's really worrying from a culture perspective that US and Ireland have had such strong links. Like, you go to any city, we were seeking to open up the opportunities for Irish people to work in the United States. But equally, we have schemes and visa programs to allow American students come for longer periods in the summer, for 9 months or for a year, and they're filling skills gaps in the Irish economy. And we want those exchanges to continue. And it's really disappointing to see the trend.
No, Pat, the irony of this, just to finish the point on that, is that America has been the great beneficiary of openness to the world. Sure. You know, it's the world leader economically, militarily, academically, scientifically. And that's
Trump doesn't,
because it has
he,
been.
He doesn't understand, does he? I mean, that's the kind way to put it, that he doesn't see the benefit of higher education, and he despises the people who actually go to Harvard. And I'm sure none of his cabinet went to Harvard.
I couldn't tell you.
His son certainly won't be going there, according to the reports anyway.
But we also have this is a challenge for us as well. We need to make sure that we understand the benefits of allowing people to come to Ireland and enrich our culture, build our country into a stronger country as well. And I think the rhetoric that has largely been led from the US is obviously permeating into our discourse and our dialogue as well. And that's, again, how much we want to stand up for a value of openness otherwise.
Who's going to be harvesting the orange crop, the peach crop? Who knows if they're all being sent home? Who's going to work in Mar-a-Lago? You know, all these questions for the ordinary Republican who uses migrant or immigrant labour, when they're all gone, what next?
It does underscore the huge benefit. We might talk about the limits of the European Union, but like their huge benefit of the European Union is the free movement of people. And, you know, I was the beneficiary of a J1 programme, but I also spent the summer in Germany. And I suppose I think there probably the European Union needs to work now to give, because of the language difficulties, but to give students from each European country outside of Erasmus, more opportunities to travel to each country. And I think that's something we should work on. And it's one of the things that we have to do now more and more is move away from America as being an unreliable partner and actually start to see how we can
build other partnerships. Finally, Pat, you said 3.5 years and then J.D. Vance in the wings.
For another 8. That's a prospect, all right, isn't it?
Anyway, on that note, thank you all very much for joining me. Paul McAuliffe, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West, Pat Leahy, political editor of the Irish Times, and Janet Horner, Green Party councillor for Dublin North Inner City, Cathaoirleach of the Green Party. And that's all we have time for. We won't have any audio of Gerry Adams in this programme, perhaps in the next one. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app, powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show. My thanks to our team, editor Emma Bradley, senior producer Claire Darmody, producer Niamh Dunn, researchers Cian Burns and Dylan Hand, the broadcast assistant Anne Kane, Cormac McDonough on sound.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.